On arriving at the Clark, many visitors are surprised by the depth and variety of art available at this museum in the Northern Berkshires. In addition to an impressive collection of the works of Impressionist painters, the Clark boasts works from the Renaissance up through modern times.
Yep. In addition to their collections, director Michael Conforti has made it a priority to develop the research and academic wings of the Clark's activities. Partly as a result of his efforts, the Clark boasts one of the most accessible and extensive art libraries in Massachusetts and, frankly, in the world.
Director Michael Conforti joins us today to talk about the Clark and all that it has to offer, and it is a great pleasure to be here and to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Great to be here, both of you. Thank you for coming. I know you've been planning on doing this for a long time.
We've been planning this since your reopening.
But you picked a great day.
How do you figure?
Well, it's gorgeous.
Well, you know, I was just outside. The sun is shining. It's a wonderful place to be on a very cold day like this. And there's ice skating in the pond next door, if you want to.
Hell, there's ice skating in the parking lot.
As there is in lots of places in the Berkshires at the moment.
You know, for people who, just to bring everybody up to date, and so we have a baseline, tell people about what monumental, amazing thing happened in July when you reopened, what you had accomplished as an institution.
Yeah. Well, as you know, you all know that we've been working on the evolution of the Clark over the last decade or two. We had this long-range plan to actually develop the campus that was going to really express the expanded program of the Clark, both on the research side, as you say, Alan, and then on the museum side, the special exhibition side. And we finally got to that point with opening Clark Center. And and we're in it now, Carswell Room, rather beautiful, as you say, finished by a famous Japanese architect, Tadao Ando. And the museum itself has been totally renovated, and we took everything down to studs and rethought, took offices out, made galleries out of them, took the old loading dock out. That's been really totally reconceived as well by an architect called Annabelle Seldorf. But I guess it allows us to actually be the institution we've always wanted to be, now with this wonderful space. But I have to say, where I start to pinch myself, and I do it regularly, particularly today, where breaking news, the Architect's newspaper, which is a kind of Bible of the architectural world, has announced today that the Clark has been awarded the top prize as the best overall landscape design this past year. And I received on behalf of the Clark in London in early December, the Apollo magazine, a British art magazine's award for the best museum opening of the year, knowing that this year opened the Mauritshuis in The Hague, the Aga Khan Museum in Toronto, the Kimball, but the Clark is. So the part that I didn't expect, I knew that we would need great programs. We were going to, and need space for them. I knew that this was going to be a very special location for us. But to get this outside critical acclaim, which has been unsolicited, has been, I pinch myself.
And what's the relationship between the Clark and Williams College?
Well, we do lots of things cooperatively. And I will say that when you go to the Northern Berkshires, my own view is that everything is here because of Williams College.
Sure.
And when you scratch it, there's Williams College at the base, where the college wanted the theater festival to be here in the 50s, and it came, and Mass MoCA was kind of a vision of many people, both administrators and trustees of the college. And that's not untrue for us as well. Finney Baxter, who was president in the late 40s, heard about Sterling and Francine Clark, the fact that Sterling Clark's grandfather had gone to Williams, one of the founders of the Singer Sewing Machine Company, graduated in 1831. They brought him here. He wanted to do it. So the notion of it being linked in always assumed a kind of partnership. Even though we're not part of Williams, we just do a lot with them. And the way in which it manifests itself probably most clearly at the moment is in the graduate program in the History of Art, which is one of only two graduate programs at Williams, and it's probably the greatest two-year program in the country, and it's housed at the Clark, but it is a Williams program. So we partner with that program and do lots of things together.
If memory serves, you're a professor in that program, are you not?
I'm a professor, yes. I'm starting
wonderful.
To teach. In fact, they've been yelling at me because I haven't sort of focused on my on my course, which begins in a couple of weeks. So, but I teach decorative arts, material culture, and design 1 year in the spring, and this year I'm teaching museum history and practice. It's both a sort of practical course as well as a museum history course.
Well, at Williams, that's a full-time load, isn't it?
Actually,
was that a shot?
That was a shot.
Was that a shot?
That was a shot from a guy who once taught six courses a semester. Yeah,
you're very unfair. But yeah. Anyway, Williams. You know, so somebody was outside just reminding me that Forbes has named Williams yet again as the number one college in the country.
That's nice.
And as you know, U.S. News and World Reports, U.S. News and World Report regularly has named Williams number one. So we're very proud of the association. We're very close to them. We do lots of different kinds of partnerships with the Williams College Museum of Art as well as Massmoca, but that's that's part of what our DNA.
I would just want to circle back to when we were talking about what you have accomplished here. The price tag was what I've seen, basically $145 million.
Is that in the
ballpark? Mm-hmm. So are you done? Because I still see scaffolding when I drove in this morning.
We actually are not done. I think the largely public component is done. That was celebrated last June when 8,000 people came to the opening. And July 4th, we had 125,000 people at various events over the course of the summer, which included the Magna Carta, which went into the fall. And right now it's Monet Kelly, a great exhibition that's breaking records, although records are not all that high. Attendance in December and January is not extraordinary. So our records to break are not extraordinary, but still it's doing very, very well. And but we still have another building to finish, and that's the Manton Research Center, which is for people who know the building, it used to be where you entered. And it's going to be made into a public reading room. There's special exhibition galleries for works on paper there, American decorative art. So there is more to come, and we open it officially in middle of May on our 60th anniversary. And the American decorative arts open, which is the last component of that building, will open in August of this next year. So we're still in process. It's taken some time.
So how, if we really, as we've heard this morning from Kevin Moran, it's a very rural area. I mean, you are one of the great music. You're one of.
I don't like the word rural.
Oh, okay, but you are one.
What's your preference?
Not a lot of people.
I think there's a connotation to rural.
Quaint. Does,
yeah. Okay. Well, let me give you some alternatives that relate to our. I was just in the Gulf States, and I was giving a talk. I was a guest of the cultural ministry in Bahrain. And in talking about Williamstown, I certainly had to show my first slide was where we were in relationship to Boston and New York. I mean, there's no question about that. But I also reminded people, I told people, this is something that's really true about this site, there are more art historians and art critics per capita in Williamstown and in North Adams than any other place in the world. And in spite of the fact that we are have a modest population base, and it's about 135,000 people who live within an hour. Well over 200,000 people come here a year.
Well, that's my point.
And we have for our mission, which is half of our mission is graduate education and research. We actually have a constituency that can bring in 100, 200 people to a symposia or colloquia or talks and stuff.
But Michael,
so
think about
for me, that's not rural.
No, I get it. But think about Chinese restaurants. I keep telling Roselle why Chinese restaurants close, and because the N population, the number of people, is not that high here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you draw, I am sure, from a lot of places that are external to the immediate neighborhood.
Yeah, there's no question about that. But we are a world institution that happens to be located in a special beautiful Berkshire environment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you're right.
I don't have to tell you that. You know all of that. But,
I live here.
So when you're all done and your 60th anniversary and you say, okay, the give us an idea of the your schedule of how you would go through a year, because it is you are certainly serving many masters, right? You have the tourists that we've been talking about coming in, especially during the summer season, although the winter's doing great too. And then you have that educational component.
Well, I mean,
research.
It hasn't stopped, really. I mean, it's not as though it's not happening right now. And
right.
And there are two components to everything that we do. On the research side, I won't bore you with a lot of the detail, but we bring in scholars from all over the world to spend anywhere from a month to a year here working in our history library and linking with the symposia and colloquium program that's focused on the visual arts that that does programs not only here in Williamstown but at various other sites, in New York, and we've had conferences in Singapore and Manila and South Africa and the rest. So that's a component of what we do. And that's really separate from what the public sees, although there is no question that the seriousness of purpose of the Clark is felt by that that reality. And I think that when the Manton Research Center opens with the public public reading room, the sort of behind-the-scenes world of art will be that much more manifest. You'll go into the public reading room, and you'll find out what scholars are actually doing there, what ideas are being generated there. So the public, there will be a public face to the sort of research that we do and the critical thinking we do.
Is that important?
For me, it's deeply important. It's been it's what makes us unique in the world, because there are only two or three places in the world that have this sort of combined art museum and separate research function. And I say that because in our research and academic program, you can come here and work on Islamic art. You can work on things that quite apart from the Impressionists and Old Masters in our collection. Last year we had an Islamicist, we had somebody working on medieval art, we have people working on ancient art. So it's a separate conversation, and it links so nicely with Williams, because Williams, as you well know, has had a long tradition for training curators and directors, so that the fact that the Clark is a kind of depth component to everything that happens at Williams is a positive. But I do want to come back to the more obvious, public component, and that is this extraordinary permanent collection, which is I was surprised, actually. In the summertime, we did a wonderful abstract show from the National Gallery of Art, and people were very happy to come to it. I was thrilled that we finally were going to embrace the 20th century in our program. We couldn't do that before because we didn't have large enough scale galleries. But time and time again, and you see it in the numbers, people wanted to go back to the permanent collection. They felt it was their own. The Renoirs that they had grown up with, the Bouguereau, the Piero della Francesca, one of the great Italian Renaissance paintings in America. The fact that they were reinstalled and given a kind of new specialness was something that the public, whether the public was specifically from the Berkshires or were their regular visits from Boston or New York, or whatever, that was more powerful than our special shows.
And
I was thrilled. On the other
hand, by the way, I want to point out that's why I'm wearing my Renoir tie today.
Thank you. It's a nice tie. It doesn't happen to be a Renoir that is ours, but
well, I understand.
Listen, but
he'll hit the gift shop on the way out.
But as we, the last component, and something you're alluding to, and something that I've, referenced, is special exhibitions. We've done a lot. We're doing a lot in the fall and winter, but we will continue to do large scale special exhibitions in the summertime. And we began this in the late '90s of a larger scale. We've done shows on John Singer Sargent, on Renoir. We've done it on, Pizarro, and now. The Van Gogh exhibition next summer will be an extraordinary opportunity for people. So,
we want to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Michael Conforti is with us. We are broadcasting live from the Clark Art Institute in Williamstown, Massachusetts. We will be back with our discussion after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School, Harlemville, New York. Early childhood through grade 12, accepting applications, nurturing living connections. HawthorneValleySchool.org. The Blue Marble, a world of gifts in Amherst, Massachusetts. Featuring hand-selected jewelry from over 40 artists, including local, Native American, and fairly traded work. TheBlueMarble.biz. And Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga and their Cheek to Cheek album tour at Bethel Woods on Saturday, July 25th. Tickets available Monday, January 26th at BethelWoodsCenter.org.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our live broadcast from the Clark Art Institute in Williamstown, Massachusetts. We are sitting in the Carswell Room in this beautiful space with the director of this museum, Michael Conforti, and it's, again, wonderful to have you with us. You know, I have to say that when you look at the collection as a whole, we've talked about the permanent collection, we've talked about the research, we've talked about the special exhibits that have come, but let us talk just for a moment about the building, because that is reason enough to visit this place. It is a stunning work of art in and of itself, as you mentioned, by the awards that you're already receiving.
It's stunning, and I mentioned I was in, you know, Gulf States recently. They're just finishing a new Louvre for Abu Dhabi, which is on grand scale, and they're planning a Guggenheim there. It's interesting to think about where the Clark is ending up in terms of the appreciation and in our moment in time. In the 90s, our colleague here in town, Tom Krenz, imagined Bilbao with the Guggenheim. It was a great event. But since 2008 especially, there's been a lot of talk about going small and going subtle and going, you know, quiet. While we didn't respond to that specifically, it seems as though we've captured that mood. And the fact that I have talked about, and it's been often misinterpreted, Berkshire Bilbao is the Clark. And it's not about it being Bilbao, it's about being anti-Bilbao, meaning it's about things below grade, it's about quiet, it's about embracing the landscape, it's about landscape being as important as building. And the fact that so much of our building was built, even though we have 140 acres below grade, and is about the subtlety of human interaction with works of art. It's,
what do you mean below grade? I'm sorry.
Below grade meaning we are now, even though you don't know it, below grade, and you don't see. But we had to build so much space that we didn't want to have this huge blob in a small college town.
Not that Frank Gehry's Bilbao Museum is a blob.
However, it wasn't Berkshire's. And for me, landscape was more important. And I think it's one of the reasons why we've gotten the award. So in a way, we serendipitously captured the mood of the moment, the sort of anti-grand scale mood. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've gotten a certain level of award. But I will say, apart from that, when you walk through the Clark, you don't feel overwhelmed. Mm. I think there's a concern on the part of members of the public. I'm sure some of them will listen, and I knew there would be. A Japanese architect who does two big walls at the beginning of a parking lot and keeping you from knowing where the building is, in fact. I knew that we would have trouble getting people to understand that. But his point, and I think people are starting to get it, is to have people move in their psychology away from the parking lot, away from their normal worldly experiences, to then go into through our doors and look at the water feature and up at the hills, and I watch them change their mood. They get kind of angry along the long walk, and once they get into the through the doors and start looking at the beautiful campus and the water feature and the terraces, they're all happy again. And I think that is what
you've calmed them. You've soothed them.
It's amazing. And that was Ando's intention, to get them a little bit riled and then to give them an experience they wouldn't forget. And I will say that the value of the Clark experience is not only the value of seeing the great art in the special exhibition galleries now conceived in the lower level of this building, the permanent collection which I talked about, but just walking around the terraces. One of my surprises, actually, one of my great pleasures has been to watch people hang out here after 5 o'clock when we close. They don't want to leave. The campus is open 24 hours. So they don't have to leave. And little kids are putting their feet in the water, and people are taking the sun in, you know, late in the day. And people are just happy being here. And I thought that might happen when I saw this in a plan, but I didn't really think it would happen as extraordinarily as it has. So,
Michael,
that's been a positive for me.
I wanted to ask you about something that is.
Yep.
There are museums in this country that have huge amounts of shock value. Mm-hmm. You know, Christ in urine or feces, or and people come and see to see this stuff, and it gets in the newspapers, and Giuliani yells and screams that this isn't right, and that other people say, yes, this is art, and that's what it's all about. How much avoidance does the Clark have in terms of that? I mean, you've built on such a foundation here. I'm wondering, what do you think about shock art?
Well, I will say that the Clark is exploring, this is not directly answering your question, but the Clark is exploring the ways in which it shows contemporary art, and my colleagues who will be on after will talk about that. But you're talking about a very special kind of contemporary art, and it just may not be the place for us as an institution, not because we don't believe in the value of shock in a gallery setting, because that's one of the functions of art, to occasionally shock. But it may not be the role of the Clark when we have an extraordinary place next door called Massmoca, which is a kind of a factory for innovation. When I see where the Clark's role is in terms of the contemporary, it may be the contemporary that's somewhat more established. Whether it's calmer or whether it's more blue chip, I don't say. That's for the public to determine. But we've had an Elena Tsui show, we had a Juan Munoz show, we're planning a Thomas Schutte installation on our campus this year. I think there are places that are appropriate for art with a greater shock, and it just may not be our place.
Okay. It's a good answer.
When you're, we're at the end of what, 12, 13 years that you've been?
No, I've been here.
Well, you've been here for.
Oh, so, sorry.
The whole plan.
Project really started conceptually in 97, 98. We started with a master. It was a slow process. Embraced. Yeah, I mean, you didn't know when it was going to end, but we did a master plan for development that it was communicated to the Williamstown and Berkshire community in 2001. Then we hired Ando. He presented his ideas in 2003. We first built the Lunder Center at Stonehill, which opened in 2008, and that was actually designed later. Because we didn't want to put all of the needs in this building. So it's been complicated. But we've lived with that complication, and I think the results are, the world has recognized the specialness of the results, and that's been extraordinarily positive for all of us.
And, of course, the single word that we don't like to talk about too much is money. It takes a lot of money to do all of this.
It does, and we've had incredible donors.
How do you get them? Give us a little lesson.
I don't actually go out and get them. They come very much on their own.
Really?
Some are members of the boards of trustees. We had an extraordinary gift from the Manton Foundation in 2007, which allowed us to really go forward with this project.
Can I ask how much it was?
$50 million.
That's a chunk of change.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
But actually, that gift, which was a $90 million gift, $40 million in art and $50 million in money, was the largest gift to an American art museum in 2007.
That's amazing.
And they saw the Clark, and still see the Clark, as a place where we would house the collection of Sir Edwin Manton and support the research and academic programs here. So we named the Manton Research Center in honor of that gift, an amazing gift.
There's been quite a controversy lately. Maybe I can just divert for a moment about
about a minute and a half.
Yeah, about renaming. In other words, you get somebody who gives you that amount of money. Years later, it's not as much as the currency is worth, and they rename. I got a minute?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it happens, and I think. Perpetuity is a judgment of an attorney general and not necessarily. And I will say many New York institutions now where the issue is, shall we say, more rife than here, are actually, negotiating with donors in a practical way about how long their name could be on a building. And I think that's part and
could
parcel
be on a
of
building in
do.
Perpetuity.
In perpetuity, but perpetuity being defined in contractual terms. Is it 30 years? Is it 50 years?
Interesting.
No, Louis Lefkowitz once in the 80s or 90s, when he was Attorney General in New York, defined perpetuity as 22 years. So, donors don't always have that view. So.
No, I would expect not.
Well, it is a wonderful thrill to have you here and for you to have us here at the museum. For more information on the Clark Art Institute, you can visit clarkart.edu. And just a reminder, we're going to be talking about the permanent collection. We'll be talking about the special Monet Kelly exhibit, as well as a preview of the summer shows, as well as your relationship with all the other wonderful museums around you, and all of that coming up in our next 2 hours. Michael Conforti, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
I love being here.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.